Welcome to Managing Safety, brought to you by the Florida Aviation Network, an effort of the National Aviation Safety Foundation and a coalition of local, regional, and national aviation organizations and agencies. This talk show addresses strategies for thinking in today's complex aviation world. Now, here's Rich Weber, Chief Pilot for the Jacksonville Sheriff's Aviation Unit and aviation speaker from Jacksonville, Florida, who is today's host.
Welcome back. I'm your host, Rich Weber, with the Florida Aviation Network, with my co-host, Michelle Cassidy, and we are broadcasting from the Howard Hughes exhibit here in the Florida Air Museum at Sun and Fun 2013, the 39th annual Sun and Fun Flying and Expo. And with us today, we've got a very interesting, knowledgeable, and informative guest, Lieutenant Colonel Phil Zednik.
Hi, thank you.
Welcome. Thanks for having me on. Thanks for coming. Colonel, tell us a little bit about your background. You've got quite an extensive and very interesting background with your time spent in the Army.
Well, yeah, thank you for asking. I spent 21 years in the Army in the Communications Signal Corps arena, and during that period of time, I had some unique opportunities, one being I was a battalion commander that took soldiers and troops over during Operation Desert Shield, Desert Storm, during the first Gulf War, and took everybody there and got everybody home safely. So we were very blessed with that. And one of my most interesting assignments was from 1978 to 82 as a young captain. I was selected to become part of the White House Communications Agency, which is a joint service agency that provides communication support to the president, vice president, the White House staff, and the president can exercise his role as the national command authority to release nuclear weapons and things of that. And that's why it's an all-military operation. And I had the fortune of carrying the football with all the nuclear release codes, and I was again in charge of all the voice communication, both secure and non-secure, for the president, and had the opportunity to fly on Air Force One, Marine One, the National Emergency Airborne Command Post, a flying war room. Took about 32 trips with the president around the world, putting in communication support as we traveled around. So when he got there, if he needed to talk to someone or get some information, we had it all in place for him.
Interesting. That's quite interesting and quite a life experience, because that was not only – there was two presidents, actually, that you – worked under, correct?
That's correct. I had 2.5 years with President Carter, and then my last year and a half I was with President Reagan, and in that role I was chief of the audiovisual branch for the White House, and we did all the lighting, the backdrops, we set up his podiums, we built — every president has a custom-made podium built for him based on their height and everything else. And we set the mics up with a primary and a backup, gave a direct feed to the media, and also for a year and a half, we ran the very first teleprompter speech for the president, for President Reagan, in September 1981 on his economic address. We actually built the first teleprompter, and I had the fortune, or misfortune, but actually running each page through the teleprompter, one page. This was before computers, folks, and running that one page at a time through the teleprompter, and have to watching exactly where President Reagan was going with his speech and his pauses and everything else. So it was quite a challenge, but that started the whole teleprompter scenario for all the future presidents.
Yeah, look where the teleprompter is now, huh?
Yeah, look where it is. Yeah.
What would we do without the teleprompter?
I don't know. I think some people may get lost without a teleprompter.
Absolutely.
Today.
Well, that's pretty interesting, and not many can say that they've served under presidents, and having served under two, that's quite an accomplishment, and it's that's something very admirable.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it was a great experience and a good life experience, and you really got to see put things in perspective from that level, seeing, so not many things upset me after having worked up there. So.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah. It was probably quite intense at times, pretty busy.
Oh, yeah. It was instant feedback. Either it worked or it didn't work, so we had that issue. And we were very fortunate every time it usually worked, so we're in good shape.
Yes. Good. So from there then, after the White House was, as a young captain, is then when you went over for the
I had other assignments since then, as I got promoted up to lieutenant colonel, and then as a battalion commander in Germany, we went to Desert Shield. I retired from the military and then moved here to Lakeland. Been here since 93, and started teaching an Army junior ROTC program here at a local area, at a new high school here in Lakeland. And then I got involved in real estate, and now I'm still have an active broker's license, but I'm basically full-time retired, and I do nothing but volunteer work, and especially with the Civil Air Patrol and other things. So,
well, that's good. We certainly have the background and the credentials to do what you're doing now, as the Florida Wing Commander for the Civil Air Patrol, and all the things that they do. Could you give us just a little background about the Civil Air Patrol and what it is, what their mission is?
Sure. Civil Air Patrol was founded in 1st of December 1941, about a week before Pearl Harbor, and with a group of civilian pilots basically got together and said, hey, we're having a lot of our shipping being sunk by German U-boats. And so as a result of that, they got together and flying their own aircraft and everything else, started flying coastal patrols all the way from Maine, all the way down to the East Coast, around the Gulf Coast, all the way to Galveston. And we had many large coastal patrol bases, not only here in Florida, but up in the Delaware area. And credited with sighting and making different submarines, submerge, actually drop bombs out of their little private airplanes. And so that was the start of it. Then we came, in 1943, we became incorporated by Congress. We're a 501c3 corporation. And when the Air Force became its own service in 1948, we became the auxiliary of the Air Force. And we are three congressionally mandated missions, cadet programs, aerospace education, and emergency services. In fact, during the war, the very first air medal given during World War II was to a Civil Air Patrol pilot.
And for what?
Well, for his efforts in inciting and attacking a submarine off the coast up in Delaware, Rehoboth, Delaware.
Part of the homeland defense, as we call
it. Exactly, which we still do. That's one of our, we're kind of evolving into those missions. We're doing a lot more missions currently with Homeland Security and with the Federal Emergency Management Agency and things of that nature.
So it really started out as these guys that formed their own group of the Civil Air Patrol, what it is now, and they funded it themselves, which was probably a
difficult task. That's correct. They paid for their own fuel, their own maintenance, and everything.
And it's evolved now where it's part, as you said, part of the United States Air Force, and yep. That is probably
We're a line item in the Air Force budget. Our budget nationally is about $28.4 million, and we've been at that level for about 5 years. So there's not many organizations out there that can say they've maintained their constant level budget. Nationwide, we have 52 wings. Each state's a wing, and if you include District of Columbia and Puerto Rico, we have 52 wings. We have 550 aircraft. Civil Air Patrol is the largest owner of single-engine aircraft in the world, and a majority of ours are Cessna. Cessna loves us because we buy planes every year from them. We have well over 61,000 members nationwide, and we are becoming basically a resource of choice. For every dollar invested in Civil Air Patrol, you get about a 7-to-1 return on your money when we're doing missions because we're all volunteers, and our only cost to our clients, if you want to call them that, and who we're supporting is just the operation and maintenance of the aircraft, fuel, and things of that nature.
Excellent.
So it's really grown.
It has definitely grown, and Florida is the largest wing within the nation. We have 87 units spread from all the way from Key West to Pensacola. We have 27 aircraft here in the wing, a variety of Cessnas, 172s, 182s, a 206. We also have a Mall. We have two gliders, and again, we have a little over 4,000 members here in Florida. So we're the largest, not size-wise geographically, but numbers-wise, we're right up there. We're the largest wing.
Excellent. And now, and that the 4,000 members, that's going to include young cadets all up through, as well as some adult members. So there's something
and
for
we're
everybody.
We're split just about 50-50 here in Florida. The cadet program is for individuals anywhere from ages of 12 to basically 20. And they get involved in the program, and again, we want to develop future leaders, and that's the main purpose of the program, to educate them on aerospace and get them involved in aviation if possible. There's certainly no requirement to go into military if you're in Civil Air Patrol. Mm-hmm. But they actually take tests and progress through a program, and we want to just build future leaders of America in supporting our community, state, and nation with different activities and things of that nature. So the cadets can definitely get involved. They get to go on orientation flights, both in gliders and powered aircraft, and a lot of them go on to take flight training through the Civil Air Patrol.
So how do they get? How do teens get involved with the Civil Air Patrol?
That's a great question. Thanks for asking. What they can do, we have a national website. It's www.gocivilairpatrol.com, and there is a whole list of frequently asked questions and things of that nature for teachers, for people interested in pilots, for young adults that want to become involved in the program. And answers about the, and for parents mainly, for questions about what the program entails and everything else. And they can just put in their zip code, and it will pull up their the nearest unit to them. It'll give them a point of contact, give them someone to call, and they can find that information when and where their local unit meets. And you just go there and check out the program. If there's something they're maybe interested in, there's a regular membership application and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. So, but good question. They in fact, we have a few more cadets in Florida than we do senior members right now. So we're very blessed with that.
That's good because that's our future, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what we said. We're trying to develop those future leaders that can go out there and do great things for us.
And with the cadet program, now there's also, I'm assuming, a rank structure so they can kind of learn the rank and file.
Absolutely. Yeah, we do the we follow the Air Force rank structure. They take tests and they can progress all the way from airman all the way up to full colonel. And the equivalent of an Eagle Scout, for example, in the Civil Air Patrol is called the SPOTS, the Carl SPOTS Award, and that's the highest award you can receive. About 15% of every first class entering the Air Force Academy, believe it or not, is a Civil Air Patrol cadet.
So that really can lead them to quite a future.
The very first, the very first female Thunderbird pilot, Civil Air Patrol cadet. Eric Bowe, one of the mission pilots on several space shuttle program, Civil Air Patrol cadet. So we have folks throughout the aviation career that have gotten their start through Civil Air Patrol.
Whether they proceed through, junior ROTC and then ROTC in college, or if maybe maybe they get an academy appointment. There's different ways that they can.
Absolutely, yeah. People can get involved any way they want, like I said. And you do not have to be a pilot to be a member of Civil Air Patrol for an adult. Mm-hmm. You literally can just take any position you want within a unit. We have things from finance, personnel, administration, working with the cadets. There's all kind of activities you can get involved in. You can become a member of an air crew as an observer, flying an aircraft with a pilot, or a scanner, looking for targets. We fly approximately 90% of all the, 70 to 90% of all the inland search and rescues for First Air Force out of the Air Force Rescue Coordination Center out of Tyndall Air Force Base. And that's one of our main stays that we still do on a daily basis.
So then that's where, I'm sorry, it was kind of noisy, but where there was if they need to launch, then that's the main launch site for
right.
some
well,
of
what
the
they would
emergency?
Do, we would, someone reports an overdue aircraft. We have an ELT going off, picked up by the satellites or whatever. That information is transmitted to the Air Force Center up in Tyndall Air Force Base, and they'll do an initial analysis and everything else. And if we need, they will then contact our alerting officer. Within each wing has its own alerting officer on a weekly basis, and they would go ahead and call that mission down to us. And then at that point, we become an actual auxiliary of the Air Force, and we're flying and looking for. Every year, Civil Air Patrol is credited between 35 and 50 actual lives saved as a result of our searches.
Those efforts then have obviously resulted in persons surviving and living when maybe they had crashed. Or
absolutely, yep. We have found several down in the Keys in the water, and we here in Florida, we had, I think, 7 or 8 saves in the last 3 or 4 years here within Florida, actually lives saved.
Excellent, because even an off-site landing where there maybe nobody could find them, or they were off-site landing in some location that they weren't able to get to to a phone or somewhere to get help.
Yeah. So we do a lot of that, and here at Sun and Fun, our mission here at Sun and Fun is mainly on the recruiting side. We do a lot of recruiting information and things of that nature, but we also, we're here in case we have ELTs that go off, transmitters and stuff, emergency transmitters. We go out and we look for those and make sure that it's just someone either bumped the switch or hard landing or something else. But we're here at Sun and Fun basically for situational awareness, making people aware of what the program is, what it has to offer, and how they can get involved. That's our key. We have one of our Cessna 182s here as an example of one of our aircraft, and we're over in the Northeast Exhibit Area right between Harley-Davidson and Recreational Aviation Foundation in the Northeast Exhibit Area.
Now, with the aircraft, do you guys have I guess what I'm trying to say is like a basic platform that you kind of require for equipment?
Right, yeah. Everyone, if you want to be a pilot with Civil Air Patrol, and again, I said we have the 172s, 182s, and we have about 8 or 9 G1000, full glass cockpit 182s. So we have kind of the state-of-the-art stuff. We're getting very, very involved in digital photography, and that's something that we're doing on a regular basis. We did it during the BP oil spill during Deepwater Horizon, things of that nature. We also we did a 118-day continuous mission, flew over 2,000 hours, 20,000 man hours, and took over 300,000 photos. And we did it for less than $500,000. The Air Force said, and the Coast Guard said, well, we can do that mission. And we asked them for how much. They said $22 million.
Right.
So guess what? We're kind of a good bang for your bucks. And then during the recent Hurricane Sandy in the Northeast, Craig Fugate asked us to go out and do geo-reference digital photography, which we did.
Which means?
Which means that from our aircraft, we could actually take digital photography with latitude, longitude, right down to the, you know, couple of feet here. And we downloaded over 150,000 photos to the FEMA website.
Of different,
all of the areas
that
were affected. Yes, sir. Well, all the areas that were affected by the storm, and Craig Fugate, who used to be the director of emergency management here in Florida, and then was selected by President Obama to go to the national level, he's now one of our biggest cheerleaders and stuff because he could actually go on there and look at all the areas that were devastated during the storm, and they actually used it to allocate resources and set priorities of where they wanted to get relief to. And individual homeowners could actually go on, type in their address, and it would pull up, and they could actually see a visual picture of what was or was not there and what extents of the damage and things of that nature. And so we did 150-some thousand photos for a little over $180,000. So that's pretty good return. So we can fly an aircraft for about $150 to $170 an hour because we're all volunteers. So we're, like I said, we're a national resource of choice now.
Excellent. And that's quite a rate, you know, considering, like you say, what you're providing, the service you're providing, that's a pretty low rate.
Absolutely, yeah.
Now, with Sandy, and were they able to, because most of those people had to evacuate, were they able to then, how quickly were the photos up where they could see their house and what kind of damage was left?
There was a pretty good turnaround on that. Once we got the call and the mission to do it, we had aircraft come in from about 10 or 12 states up in the area, from all over, that actually deployed into there. And once they got their mission base set up in each state, and they started launching, and so daily we were downloading photos. So it was pretty quick.
And then that was probably could be complicated mission with all the aircraft up there, as well as some of the other emergency aircraft in the area, you know, the law enforcement, probably media.
There was a lot of coordination, and that's we're part of the incident command system, so we work with all the different agencies, basically, you know, and so we can talk their lingo, they can understand us, so we're all in the same sheet of music when in terms of running a large-scale operation. So
and that could be, and that just shows the expertise, though, that in the experience that the Civil Air Patrol has, that they're able to, you know, fit in with that and be a part of that, because that's a pretty busy time, you know, when you have an emergency situation like that, and they're able to communicate and be part of it. Because I know that if they couldn't do that, then they wouldn't be allowed into the area to do their mission. So that just gives credit to the Civil Air Patrol.
That's correct. Yeah, we have very well-trained people, and it's a constant, you know, maintaining your currency and different things, just like flying, anything else, to do it safe and to do it right, you have to be current and know what the latest rules are, and so that's what we stress that as people go through the different training processes and move up to become incident commanders and be able to run different size operations.
Now, as far as, like, some of the piloting for any of our viewers that may be interested in, you know, becoming a Civil Air Patrol member and they want to do it, you know, as a pilot, is there any certain particular requirements that they have to have, you know, a minimum of a private pilot and an instrument rating? Do you guys do any kind of weather flying or anything?
Basically, we have everything from retired Air Force bomber jet pilots to commercial airline pilots that still fly for the airlines to private pilots. We take everyone from a private pilot on up through CFII. It doesn't matter. If you have a current medical, you're a current pilot, minimum of a private pilot's license, and IFR or not, it doesn't matter. We have different things that you can do, and everyone goes through a basic training program, orientation type program, and must do like anything else. If you're going to rent an aircraft, you have to get checked out. Same thing with us. You have to go through a checkout procedure, and once you're evaluated that, then you're able to fly the Civil Air Patrol aircraft.
Now, with those cadets who are in Civil Air Patrol, but they don't fly yet, is there any way for them so they can fly sooner or later?
Absolutely, yes. Again, when they get the free orientation flights, we take them up to wet their taste bud, basically, on aviation, and try to get them involved, and that's one of our main missions too. Again, to promote aviation down the road and build our pilot population. So. But they can also fly as observers and scanners in the airplane on different missions. They can also do digital photography, taking those photos, things of that nature. So there are many opportunities for them to get involved in the aviation side of the house also. So
that's good.
Excellent, because they could take some of their skills, like say if they're a photographer, maybe that's what they want to do as a career is photography, but they can develop some of those skills through the Civil Air Patrol and, you know, using them and getting on board and going out and taking photos, even though they may not have an interest in actually becoming a pilot.
Right.
But they can. It also gives them an avenue to use those learned skills that they're working on as a photographer, for example.
And again, on the cadet side, we also have ground teams, for example, that actually go out and look for the ELTs using direction finding equipment and things of this nature. And we use them for flight line marshaling, for marshaling aircraft at different events and things of that nature. So there's a lot of areas in the aviation field and everything else. But again, we stress the leadership, character development, things of that nature. And that's one of the core backbone of our cadet program.
Excellent. When they're out on the search and rescue mission and you locate an aircraft or a person or whatever it may be, what kind of communications do y'all use? Do you just go through the aviation radio and then just notify the air traffic control, the frequency that you're talking to, or do you have separate radios that you can talk to?
We do have our own Civil Air Patrol radios, but we're obviously in touch with the air traffic control system and that network. But we have our own radio system for that if we're out looking on a search and rescue type mission. We also have we can launch aircraft. We actually put a repeater, like an airborne repeater, at a certain altitude and acts as a relay. So we can cover large distances to get the information back to where we need to get it to.
They've got to coordinate with ground units as well. Then once they locate it, to coordinate them in, to direct them in to the site, whether it's off landing site, crash site, whatever it may be. So that's where then they would use the Civil Air Patrol radio?
Yes, that's exactly right. We would have direct communication. So we don't love the media, but we don't want the media knowing what we're doing, where we're at, and what we're finding, and things
right.
of that
of
nature
course.
until an incident's basically closed out and things of that nature. So we have our own discrete frequencies and radios we use for that kind of information.
That way you can coordinate with like local law enforcement, local EMS, fire rescue.
Exactly, that's right. And when we interface with those folks, anytime we go on an actual, we call it a red cap, which is actually a real mission where there is a possibility of a downed aircraft that they know they've lost it on radar contact or overdue or someone sees wreckage or things of that nature. So, yeah, those are actual missions that we really get involved in.
And thank goodness that we have the Civil Air Patrol that gets involved
yes.
like that, because, like you said, there could be overdue aircraft that could be out there for days before they're found if there was nobody out there looking for them.
And that's why we urge everybody, and I know, file those flight plans. Let someone know where you're going, when you're going to get there, your route of flight, just anything. And the more planning you can do, then I can sleep better at night, and I don't have to be up all night having to send out people looking for you. So makes a big difference when they do those simple little things of just that prior planning stuff when they're doing, especially a cross-country flight, that they follow those kind of procedures. It really does help us out a lot. And if you have an ELT, a 406, a new one, please fill out the time, take the time and register it. We often will get a 406 going off, picked up by the satellite, and we'll go and look up the database, or the FAA will, and no name, no address, no phone number, no tail number. Sure, that's the whole purpose of it, is so we can know who, where, what, how to reach you in case there's an issue. And so I urge everyone to please register their 406s.
Every little thing means something.
Every little thing, yeah. It's the old attention to detail thing. If you don't do it, and eventually in the long run, it's going to catch up. Just like if you let something go on your airplane and say, oh, that's not a big deal. The next week, oh, that's not a big deal. Those things start adding up, and guess what? After a while, it can become a big deal.
How much time does it usually take the time that someone is actually determined that maybe that they're overdue through the FAA, and how long is it before that you guys get notified and launched?
Well, it all depends. That's a call by the Air Force, by the Air Force Rescue Coordination Center. Like I said, they do an analysis. They look at radar data. They look at communications data. They pull up different sites. They'll check with the local airports along the route to see if someone landed and just forgot to file a flight, close a flight plan, or if someone stopped and got fuel. Or they do a lot of that analysis first. And once they've kind of exhausted those avenues and done their research, basically, that's when they'll give us the latest information, and we'll plot it out, and they'll give us all the data we need, and then we launch.
Excellent. Well, that way, because there's a lot of resources that are going to be, activated. So rather than, maybe just someone stopping for fuel, and that's why they, they're out of touch, they'll try to confirm that before they launch you and get
you
going.
That's critical. They do a good analysis, and when they tell us that there's something out there and their last known point, from that point on, we can pretty much have a good idea where we're going and launch and head out there.
What do you see? Is there anything new coming up on the horizon with the Civil Air Patrol?
The only things new that are going on is that we've reorganized as a national organization. So that's having some little pains here and there, growing and everything else. But I think in the long run, it's going to be good for us. But so we had a major reorganization recently here with Civil Air Patrol nationwide. Really not impacting down at the local unit or anything else, so people will notice not any really changes with that. And we're just constantly looking at maintaining our budget, keeping our budget. We our full budget was reinstated just recently by this last Congress for the fiscal year 2013. And so those are issues we have to deal with down in the future, again, with sequestration and things of that nature. Since we're our line item in the Air Force budget, we have to be constantly aware of that and making sure that that people know the importance and what a cost-effective organization we are. Mm-hmm. So they will continue to fund us at the appropriate levels. So that's always a constant battle.
That absolutely can be a constant battle. So it's going now on a national level to where you have just a central location as far as like the head of the CAP, whereas before it was each state individual.
Well, we still have each wing. Each wing has a wing commander, and again, I'm the Florida wing vice commander for Florida. Each wing has its own commander, and there's regions. There's eight regions in the nation. And our national commander, again, is General Chuck Carr. And our headquarters for Civil Air Patrol is Maxwell Air Force Base out in Montgomery, Alabama. And we now have a board of governors, just almost like, for example, like a board of directors type thing with CEOs, chief operating officers, chief financial officers. So we're going back to our 501c3 type structure and things of that nature.
Excellent.
Yes.
Well, that's going to probably, the purpose of that went just to have it all, everybody kind of on the same page then as far
exactly,
as...
Exactly, yeah. There's just a reorganization. But
policy
again,
and...
Policies, procedures, how things are implemented, things of that nature. But, again, we're going through that process now, and I think in the long run it's going to greatly benefit Civil Air Patrol nationwide. So.
Great. Now, with the aircraft... I guess maintenance and everything is all each done locally in each area, and then
that's a good question. About 5 or 6 years ago, I don't know, maybe about 6 years ago, we went to a centralized maintenance program. We actually have 2 or 3 vendors that we actually contract with throughout the state. This is just Florida, but nationwide they have centralized locations. So instead of everyone getting an airplane fixed at their local place, which makes it nice and easy, but we could get a better price in terms of labor, parts, and things of that nature by taking our aircraft to centralized locations around the state. So every several years, those contracts come up for bid and things of that nature. But it's a centralized maintenance program that's been very, very effective in we have a standard quality of we know what we're getting and what we're paying.
Rather than it could be up or it could be down.
That's right.
Keeps everything the same.
That's
excellent.
Right.
That's really good. Well, we sure appreciate your time that you spent with us coming in today and informing us of the Civil Air Patrol and the mission and a little bit of background about yourself and where it's going and what all it has to offer, because it's certainly a huge organization. It's just you can't say enough about it, what it does for people, and when they need you, then they want you. The families want you. They want their loved ones to be found, and that's, you can't put a price tag on
that. No, that's just it. You can't put a price even on that one life that we could be responsible for saving. So, again, I'd like to thank Florida Aviation Network and y'all for having me on today. And, again, if you want more information, it's GoCivilAirPatrol.com.
Excellent. Well, we've got to wrap it up, but stay tuned, and we'll be back.
We hope you've enjoyed today's Managing Safety, brought to you by the Florida Aviation Network, an effort of the National Aviation Safety Foundation and a coalition of local, regional, and national aviation organizations and agencies. Please visit our studio website to hear past programs.